Item number 20. Heather and Michelle, please. This is the amending the Coastal Dungeness Crab Rules. It's a briefing, public hearing, and a decision.
Morning, Vice Chair Carpenter and Commissioners. My name is Michelle Culver. I'm with the Intergovernmental Ocean Policy Unit within the FISH program, and with me is Heather Reed, who also works in Intergovernmental Ocean Policy and, among other things, oversees the management of our coastal Dungeness crab fishery. She's also a manager of our groundfish fisheries and our halibut fisheries. And we have some rules that we will be presenting and describing to you this morning and requesting your approval of. And just a minute before we get started, I guess I just want to echo some of the comments that have been made, Commissioner Wecker, and just want to say thank you for your dedication to the process and your passion about fish and wildlife resources. Thanks. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Heather for most of the presentation.
Good morning. Thanks, Michelle. So I wanted to start this morning. The last time I've been to the commission to talk about coastal Dungeness crab was back in 2014. So I want to start with a overview of the coastal crab fishery. It is one of the most valuable fisheries to the state of Washington. The average ex vessel value from 2012 to 2016 was $36 million. The fishery is managed under a limitations, one limiting effort. There are 223 coastal Dungeness crab licenses. Approximately 190 to 200 of them are active each year. It's also limited by a pot limit that's assigned to each one of those licenses based on historical landings. The pot limit is enforced with buoy tags on each pot. There are vessel length restrictions for each vessel, including a maximum length for all vessels. And beginning July 1, as part of a soft shell crab management program we have in place, landings are on weekly limits. The fishery occurs from about 5 to 60 fathoms off the west coast of Washington. The season starts approximately December 1 and runs through September 15th. It's managed under the same 3S management approach as the Puget Sound, so that December 1 date fluctuates based on shell condition and the crab's recovery from the primary molt period. It's also managed, the states of Washington, Oregon, and California have delegated authority to manage the crab fishery out to 200 miles through the Pacific States Marine Fisheries Commission and the Coastal Dungeness Crab Tri-State Agreement. We coordinate our fisheries with Oregon and California, so there's a lot of fishers based in Washington, Oregon, and California that have licenses to fish all along the coast. And we work with our coastal tribal co-managers to develop harvest management agreements each year for the fishery. So as Michelle mentioned, we have two proposed rule changes that we're bringing to the commission today. The purpose and the need for these changes are really just to promote efficiency and reduce cost to fishers, improve the enforceability of our existing regulations, and streamline the administrative processes. So the changes still will continue to achieve the primary objectives of the regulations that we have in place already. Before I start, you know, this is well described in the green sheet or the summary sheet, but we have worked quite closely with our Coastal Dungeness Crab Advisory Board. It's a board appointed by the director. We have regular meetings with the advisory board, but every couple of years we have a larger group of folks come together for an industry-wide meeting. All license holders are invited, processors, everybody engaged with the fishery to just talk about where we want to look at changes, what's needed, have a good check-in with a broader group of people. Back when I came to the commission in 2014, one of the issues we discussed was our replacement buoy tag program. So as I mentioned, each license is assigned a pot limit. That pot limit is enforced by a buoy tag. Back when we implemented the pot limit, we discussed a lot of different ways to enforce it, whether or not to have a replacement tag program at all. So we've kind of continued to check in on that particular issue. In 2014, the commission approved a reduction in the number of replacement tags that each license holder would get, and it was supported by our industry through these advisory board and industry meetings. At the time, our industry was very open to continuing that dialogue, even to the point of complete elimination of the replacement tag program. So one of the things we did at these spring meetings this year was talk about that again. So as I said, the replacement buoy tags improve the enforceability of our pot limits. We have seen abuse of the replacement tag program. So what that means is you can go in and get a replacement buoy tag for a pot that you haven't actually misplaced. Replacement buoy tags were initially implemented so that you could get them the day the fishery opened. We changed that in 2014 and moved that back a little bit from the opening day, giving people two weeks to assess, did they really lose their pot? And as I said, the fishery opens in December or January, horrible weather. Give them time to seek out, maybe their pots were just moved to another area. Really get a better feel for whether or not they lost a pot. So that was also part of the discussion here. Do we even narrow that down a little bit more? So what we're proposing here would reduce the number of buoy tags one step further, and then allow those buoy tags to be available from March to that start of that summer monitoring program on July 1. So the reduction would be from 10 to 5% of their initial pot limit allowance. And what we found and what we talked with our industry folks about is not very many people actually use this replacement tags. So it's a small proportion of the active fishermen that actually use them. But at the time we had these industry meetings, we went back to, are you ready to go to no replacement tags at this time? And there was no support for that, really. There's some comfort knowing those tags are available, even a lower number of tags that folks can come in and get throughout the season. So if they have the pots available, they can fish their full complement of gear. So I think I covered everything there. As I said, the process would be specific to March and July rather than 2 weeks after the season opening to the end of the season. And what that really gets at too is again at folks really taking a careful look at where are their pots. Are they really truly missing? We've had some issues with whale entanglements. I think this will be a positive step in that direction, making sure people are out there looking for lost or abandoned gear during the season. We actually have a postseason program for that lost and abandoned gear recovery, but this will address it during the season. The next proposed change we're bringing forward is relative to transporting out-of-state gear. So as I mentioned, we have quite a few Washington-based crab fishermen that also participate in the Oregon fishery or even in California. They have a license for each of those states to fish there. But What we ran into in recent years, our current rules prohibit someone having gear on board their boat that isn't tagged by us, by the Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife. And that's really, again, focused on enforcing our pot limit. But what we found was that, one, a lot of our fishermen weren't aware of the rule. And two, in years when we have a delayed season opening, either for soft shell, what we've had in the most recent years is actually a delay due to domoic acid, a significant delay in Oregon that resulted in a lot of crab pots sitting on a lot of docks for a long time. And so while maybe the general practice is to haul those pots down to Oregon, put them on a dock until you're ready to go fishing, there were so many people waiting to go fishing, there was no space. So the alternative was to keep them on their boat, and then they'd haul them down through the water when the fishery opened. But that opens a little bit of a loophole for potentially getting those Oregon pots in Washington waters before the season. So what we're doing here is not, we're allowing that activity, recognizing, you know, we want to facilitate these problems that arise with long season delays in a manner that allows our enforcement staff to continue to enforce our pot limit. So we'll do that via a permit. And a fisherman who says, I have a problem here, can call up our enforcement staff and get a permit issued by WDFW. It'll record detailed information of what they've got, where they plan to deploy the gear that our enforcement staff can use to then enforce that pot limit down the road. So that's it. We've had a great discussion with our industry about this. We haven't received any public comment up to this date. I'll let Michelle go through and talk about our proposed next steps.
Great. Thanks, Heather. So just wanted to stress, as Heather mentioned, on these two issues, certainly the buoy tag one is one that we've been discussing with our industry and have been actively engaged with them in looking at how to reduce the number of buoy tags available and how to streamline that program. And that's something we've been discussing since 2014 was the last time we came to you for action as part of that reduction. The transportation of out-of-state gear, this is a fairly new item that has come up in the last couple of years as we've had domoic acid delay the start of the season. And so this is a relatively new problem, and we were able to address it quickly through in-season action for the start of this season to do an emergency rule that allowed them to transport their gear through the water. And so really this is putting in a permanent rule fix to allow that permitted activity so we don't have to be doing an emergency action each year. So we had a couple of industry-wide meetings where we invited all of our 220 license holders in March and April this year, brought them all together and talked about these two issues. And so what we're presenting to you today has strong industry support behind it. These are not department-driven initiatives. These are things that they brought to us and requested these fixes. Our administrative process is such that the public comment period is actually open through the end of today. And so we have not received any public comment. We don't have any indication that we will be receiving any. So we're 99% sure that we're not going to receive any opposition or concern about this. However, given the timing of that, we're asking for you to give your preliminary approval at this meeting, and then absent any public comment by the end of today, then we would file the CR 103 on Monday and put these rules into permanent regulation. If on the odd chance there is some comment that comes in today, what we would then do is we would work with Tammy to notify you of that comment, let you know what our recommendation would be, and we'd address it through a subsequent conference call if that were needed. In either case, we will either confirm or make you aware of that comment. We'll confirm that there was no comment on Monday. So with that, happy to take any questions or comments you may want to offer.
Mr. Kehoe.
Yeah, thank you, Michelle and Heather. Yeah, this is a tough time of year for comments from fishermen. Many people that are engaged in this fishery are involved in other fisheries in outside areas, so be curious. I mean, I'm sure you're cognizant of that. I mean, you do have some local Westport folks, but there are a lot of other people that to make a living, you got to be involved in a lot of other fisheries, so I'm sure you're cognizant of that. So, and then one other kind of non-related but related to Dungeness crab, any update on movement in the Senate on the Dungeness Management Crab Act, which, you know, allows for the states to Washington to enforce their pot limit restrictions beyond 3 miles?
Yes, thank you. To address your first comment, we were very much aware that this rulemaking process was not the best timing to facilitate public comment, and that is why we had our meetings in March and April before folks went to Alaska or participated in other fisheries. We did get a very high level of participation in those public meetings to put these rules together. So, and then with our season, you know, opening in December, we wanted to make sure we had these in place for the next season. So that was the gist of the public comment period. On the Senate bill, we have some good news to share, and that is it did pass the Senate a couple nights ago, and so it is awaiting President Trump's signature at this time. So fingers crossed that it will be signed and
no comment
put into
on that.
Place.
He's busy golfing, but any well, other questions?
Good.
No, he's not. No, go ahead. Mr.
There again, it's not pertaining to your rule change, but just curiosity. You said that there were boat or size of the boat restrictions, and also love watching these crabbing shows on TV. They use altogether different gear in Alaska. Do you have pot size restrictions here in Washington, too?
Yes, thank you for the question, Commissioner. We do. There's a maximum size on the pot. I believe it's 13 cubic feet. And the vessel limits are a 10-foot increase. You can make a 10-foot increase to the vessel that's designated to your license. But then the maximum vessel length in the Washington crab fishery is 99 feet. So they are a little bit smaller than those big king crab pots, but they're still pretty, pretty big pots.
Regarding the replacement tags and our effort to work with the industry maybe to eliminate them altogether, wouldn't that mean that a person could lose a season pretty much altogether? If that must be the reluctance of the industry for moving completely to
thank you
not having replacement tags.
Sure. We do have a provision in our replacement tag program for severe tag loss, and it's happened a couple of times where somebody has lost all of their gear, whether one time it was over the bar on their way to deploy their pots, and another time they had a shed burned down and all the pots were destroyed, as well as the buoy tags. There's a plan for that, and those can and will be replaced, so a fisherman doesn't lose their season. Typically, we've heard a general number that folks will lose about 10% of their gear a year, and that just varies. Not everybody loses gear. Some people maybe lose more. So they're probably not going to lose their whole season. And some of the input we received at the industry meeting is on why not everybody gets a replacement tag is a lot of folks have 500 pots or 300 pots. They don't have 550 if they lose some. So some folks do, some folks don't.
I see.
So I don't think it would be a complete loss to their season.
Thank you.
So just to expand on that, with that hardship clause that we have in our regulations, that also is not subject to the 10%,
yeah,
or right. So they can, if they lose 500 pots, they get 500 tags.
Thank you. Absolutely. For the clarification. That's very helpful to me.
Thank you, Liz. Any other questions? Mr. Wecker would like to make a motion.
I moved that the Fish and Wildlife Commission.
Pardon me, one second. We have no public comment. We have no one here to comment. I apologize.
Oops. I move that the Fish and Wildlife Commission adopt the proposed changes to WAC 220-340-430 and WAC 220-340-440 as proposed by department staff.
Okay. We have a second. Mr. Holzmiller. Okay. No other comments? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same. Motion carries. Thank you, ladies. Sorry we held you up a little bit late. No. Get out of here.